The golden age of radio is on the air. Morehead State Public Radio presents classic old-time radio programs from radio's golden age, the 1930s through the 1950s. On this program of the Golden Age of Radio, Dan Duryea stars as the man from Homicide from 1951. Cecil and Sally look for their lost car, and we'll also hear an episode of the career of Alice Blair. Stay tuned for the Golden Age of Radio after today's news from NPR on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Later on today's show, from 1930, Cecil and Sally look for their lost car, and from 1939, an episode of the career of Alice Blair. Right now, Dan Duryea stars as the man from Homicide from 1951, as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
The Man from Homicide. According to Webster's dictionary, homicide is the killing of one human being by another. According to Lieutenant Lou Dana,
it's the beginning of a dirty, dangerous job that doesn't end until the killer is found.
I don't like killers.
Every week at this time, the American Broadcasting Company brings you transcribed the star of stage and screen, Dan Duryea, as Lieutenant Lou Dana, the man from Homicide.
Most men spend their lives building walls around themselves. Money, social position, land. And the man with many walls may seem to be different from the man who sells pencils on the corner. But sudden death knows no walls. And when they look into its face, all men are pretty much alike. I know. What's up, Inspector?
Something hot, Lou. Just took a call from old man Kelso. He's scared. Scared to death, Lou.
What's he got to be scared of? Falling off his money?
Claims someone is threatening to kill him.
Stick a gum, Inspector?
Huh? Oh, no. He asked for you, Lou, right away.
Yeah.
Well, you better get on it, Lou.
Inspector, what happens if we get a call from a fruit peddler who thinks someone is trying to kill him?
Oh, I know, Lou, I know.
We ignore it 9 chances out of 10. Why is this so different?
He sounded really scared, Lou, for one reason. And, well, you know the other.
$9 million. And I bet he can't sleep nights thinking how to make it 10.
Better get out there, Lou.
Sure. I'll go out and hold Kelso's hand, and maybe some of what he's got will rub off on me.
The Kelso butler and I exchanged chill greetings before he consented to guide me to Mr. Kelso's room. The 50-cent tour through a mausoleum. He announced me, left, and I was face to face with $9 million.
Come in, Lieutenant Dana. Come in. Sit down. Thank you for coming so promptly, Dana. I won't forget it. I still have one or two friends left, you know. I won't forget it.
Somebody's been threatening you, Mr. Kelso?
Yes, he's been threatening me. Tell me a better word for it, Dana. Tell me a better word for it when a man announces openly, brazenly, over a period of weeks, that he intends to kill me.
All right, Mr. Kelso. What's his name?
There will be no publicity concerning this, Dana.
Not unless he carries out his threat.
What? Oh, yes. Well, his name is Farley, Dana. Stephen Farley. The name should be familiar to you.
Vaguely. Small-time hood, I think.
I haven't heard anything of him in a couple of years.
Small wonder. I've been supporting him lavishly.
Any particular reason?
Farley has a sister, Vivian, formerly a singer.
Oh, I remember now. And Vivian is...
Mrs. Kelso. We were married quietly 2 years ago.
Lucky you. I remember.
It's because of Vivian that I haven't gone to the police before now. But, well, he means it, Dana. He means to kill me.
All right, if he made threats, we'll pull him in.
I'm afraid it's not quite that easy. He has not openly promised murder in front of witnesses. He's too clever for that.
What has he done?
To me, he has implied repeatedly that I must be suffering, that death will be such a happy relief, that while Vivian and he will hate to see me go, they're willing to face it for my sake. He goes on like that repeatedly.
Mr. Kelso, I'm from the homicide squad. If you got a nasty brother-in-law, I'm sorry for you. But sympathy is about all I can give you.
Lieutenant Dana, no, wait. What do you call this, if not overt evidence of intent to murder? 2 days ago, Farley took an option on an expensive home with the down payment to be made in 2 weeks when he says he expects to come into a great sum of money. 2 weeks!
Anything else?
No certainty. He took an option on a yacht in the same manner, ordered expensive clothes. He even consulted a mortician about funeral arrangements, I ask you, Dana. For the taxes I pay, I'm not entitled to protection from a thing like this. Am I to be murdered in my own bed with no one turning a hand to save me? What's this country coming to?
I'll look into it, Mr. Kelso. Where's Stephen Farley living?
Gramercy Apartments on South Garden. I've maintained a residence for him, supported him, given him a car, and now...
I'll look into it. Your wife around, Mr. Kelso?
I believe Vivian is in the pool, right?
I'll find it.
What have I worked for all my life? What security have I obtained? What...
Mr. Kelso, tell me. What's it like to have $9 million?
It's not what you'd expect, Tina. It's not what you'd expect at all.
Mr. Kelso was shivering in the warmth of the day as I left him. And on guard outside his door was an empty suit of armor with a spear. A multimillionaire defended only by a tin soldier. I found the pool, and arching off the board in a front jackknife was Vivian. I wanted her to come up and out of the water fast so I could see if it was true.
Hi.
It was.
Oh, water's wonderful today. You want to join us?
Almost any other time, Mrs. Kelso. Lieutenant Lou Dana, Homicide Squad.
Oh, you're looking for my husband, Lieutenant Dana?
I've seen him.
Didn't believe him, I hope. Oh, this is Gordon Elliott, my husband's business manager.
Oh, how are you, Dana? Excuse my wet hand.
Sure. Just don't drip on my suit.
Dana, believe me, I'm sorry you had this trip out here for nothing. I tried to stop Mr. Kelso from phoning the police.
It's all right. I don't mind.
Gordon was just going to dress and go into town unless you want him for anything, Lieutenant.
I guess you can take care of everything, Mrs. Kelso. So long, Elliot.
Bye, Dana. See you at dinner, Vivian. Huh?
Right, Gordon. Gordon's got a wonderful tan, hasn't he?
He must go over the books under a sun lamp.
The bitter Lieutenant Dana. I've heard of you.
What about your husband, Mrs. Kelso? And your brother?
Sit down, Lieutenant. Oh, no, that one's wet over here. You didn't take my husband seriously, did you, Lieutenant?
Well, he seemed pretty serious about it.
He did. Well, you know how it is with someone that old.
No. What about your brother? Anything to it?
Steve's not very much good. Never could take care of himself. He's one of the reasons I married Franklin.
What are the others?
Obvious.
I like the reasons why, he married you better.
Well.
And there's nothing in your brother's threats.
No, I'm sure of it.
Maybe I'd better ask brother. Goodbye, Mrs. Kelso.
Yeah?
You should remember me, Farley.
I do. You worked me over about 3 years ago. You didn't get anything out of me, Dana.
Well, maybe I'll have more luck the next time. Can I come in, or should we talk for your neighbors?
You can come in, Dana.
Nice apartment.
Thanks.
I know your decorator. He does calendars for pool rooms.
Yeah, same old Dana, same jokes. Sit down. Drink?
Not with you. Old man Kelso says you've been shooting off your mouth about killing him, Farley.
Yeah, he's in his second childhood.
I saw his second childhood. She says there's nothing to it either.
Then why bother me?
How about that house you took an option on?
I've been looking for a place, yeah.
What's with the yacht?
Nothing serious.
Nothing serious. Come here, punk.
Lay off me, Dana.
This smells like a game, and I don't like anybody playing games with me. In particular, a cheap hood living off his sister. Here's a string around your finger to remind you.
I don't have to take that anymore, Dana.
Then don't reach in your pockets when I talk to you. What your sister married don't build you up with me at all, Farley.
If you didn't have that badge, you wouldn't be so easy with your hands, tough guy.
If I'm tough, it's because crime and guys like you have made me tough. I don't like your apartment, Farley. Don't give me any cause to come back. I thought it over on the way back to the station, and I didn't like it. The deal was giving forth a very ripe odor, but I couldn't localize it. The inspector shared the same headache.
I don't know, Lou. Use your own judgment, I guess. What do you think?
I don't know either. We haven't got enough to be sure. I guess we better put a tail on Farley for a few days.
All right. Take Metzger for it.
Okay, I'll send him out.
And don't take any chances on a thing like this, Lou. Kelso's a big man. If he gets knocked off, we're not going to look good.
We'll look a lot better than Kelso.
Very comforting.
I sent Metzger out to stay with Farley and tried to forget about the Kelso family. The old man was easy, but at midnight that night, in my room, I was still having trouble with Vivian.
Yeah? Oh, Metzger. You what? You lost Farley? How long ago? 2 hours. Well, why didn't you call me before, you... All right. No. Go on into the station, if you can find it. I'll go out to the Kelso place. And Metzger, great work.
It was almost 1 when I pulled into the long driveway. And it took a lot of banging on the door to bang up the butler. This time I didn't wait for the guide service, but took off for Kelso's room alone. Did I mention that Kelso's room was an overnight hike from the front entrance? Well, it was, and I didn't encounter any of the settlers along the way. I paused outside the door of the man guarded by a tin suit of armor. Something was missing from the empty soldier, but I couldn't place it.
Mr. Kelso? Are you awake, Mr. Kelso? Mr. Kelso?
All the lights were on in the room, and Mr. Kelso was in bed. Then I knew what was missing from the tin soldier outside. It was the spear. Sticking straight up in the air was pinning Kelso to the bed. And his $9 million life had run out in a thin red trickle.
Technicians all through upstairs, Lou?
Just about, Inspector. They got some very pretty pictures, but not much else.
No prints on the murder weapon?
Too smeared to be any good for anything. Get anything out of the butler?
Says he was in a clinch with the maid all evening.
Did you check?
Yeah, she says yes. Must want to hold her job pretty bad to be in a clinch with him.
Yeah, like necking a quick-frozen salmon. Mrs. Kelso and Elliot show up yet?
No, not yet. Butler said they went out about 10.
And the murder was around midnight. How about little brother, Farley?
Well, nothing on him yet. We got out a broadcast on him. Should hear something if he hasn't skipped. Looks open and shut against him.
Sure. Open and shut. Open and shut.
Now, don't make things complicated, Lou. I'm going upstairs.
I'll wait for you. It's not so pretty. I want to go back.
I prowled around downstairs.
The library with the expensive first editions that Kelso had never read and never would. The dining hall with the Italian masters on the walls that Kelso had never really seen and never would. The whole huge place for entertaining the friends he had never really had and never would. Then I heard someone at the front entrance.
Hello? Who's here?
What's happened?
How are you, Elliot?
Oh, Lieutenant.
Dana.
Mrs. Kelso?
We saw the police cars outside. What's wrong?
One thing at a time. There's nothing wrong that you can do anything about. Care to tell me where you both were this evening?
Oh, of course not. We went to a drive-in movie. Mr. Kelso didn't feel up to it, so I took Vivian.
And how long were you there, Elliot?
Why, it was a little after 10 when we got there, and after 12 when we left. Isn't that about it, Vivian?
Yes. What is this, Dana?
Somebody saw you when you drove in and when you left?
Well, I think so, yes.
The movie is close to here?
Fairly close.
Walking distance?
What is this?
You can both give me the plot of the movie?
Well, I think so. It was the one about the talking mule. Francis goes to the races. You want a resume?
It's after 2 now. You left the movie at 12?
We had a few drinks.
And people saw you having the drink?
Yes.
Look, Dana...
I imagine you both can hazard a guess as to what this concerns.
My husband?
Somebody threw him a spear. He caught it. You're now the sole possessor of $9 million.
So he did do it.
Who did do what?
Nobody.
You'd have trouble convincing the late Mr. Kelso.
Can I see him?
He's not very nice to look at. How bad do you want to see him?
Not very.
Dana, can I take her into the study?
Go ahead.
Come on, Vivian.
Mrs. Kelso.
What, Dana?
This new job, managing $9 million, it may be tougher than the last one.
It's possible. But, Dana, don't let it keep you up night.
I was standing there wondering how it'd be to have Vivian Kelso keep me up nights when someone came down the stairs on very flat feet. Inspector Eddie Sherman.
I got something, Lou.
What?
One of the prowl cars outside just picked up a flash. They grabbed Steve Farley trying to get on a bus for out of town.
That's handy. Makes you look good, Inspector.
Yeah. But Lou, if it ever gets out that Farley ventilated his brother-in-law after Kelso asked us for protection...
I was just given some sound advice.
Yeah?
Don't let it keep you up nights. Let's go.
That's not much of a story, Farley.
That's all the story I got for now.
That you don't remember anything from 10 last night until they picked you up getting on a bus 4 hours later.
That's it, Dana.
Oh.
And you're happy about your prospects. Inspector, take the boys out and give me some time alone with them, huh?
Well, I don't know, Lou. There's going to be some expensive lawyers in this case.
Just quiet conversation, Inspector.
I'm warning you, Inspector. Dana's stuff don't go with me anymore. You're not fooling with some kid. I know my...
Shut up! All right, come on, boys. Oh, Lou, quiet conversation.
You don't remember anything.
I told you, Dana, and if you think that you can... What are you going to do?
Quiet conversation. Reminiscence. I knew a real smart head a few years back got picked up on a murder rap. He was innocent, had an airtight alibi. But he waited until his trial to spring it.
What happened?
In the meantime, his alibi got hit by a car. They burned the real smart head.
What's it got to do with me?
Another case. Real shrewd operator went on trial for a murder his partner committed. Just to throw the cops so far off the trail they'd never catch up. He had an airtight alibi, too.
What happened?
His partner shot the alibi. The shrewd operator got 10,000 volts.
Yeah, I guess you think you're scaring me.
You're pretty stupid if I'm not.
Now listen, Dana, I told you that
Come on, talk. Where were you tonight? If you got an alibi, spill it. You're 10,000 miles out on a limb, Buster. What happens when it gets sawed off?
Please let me alone, Dana. Let me think.
Let you think. That could be days. Where were you tonight?
All right. Just let go of me.
Give.
I was in a Turkish bath tonight from 10 to around 1. The guy that owns it left town right after. He's coming back for the trial.
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah.
What are you going to do with me?
Bait a trap.
Oh, Lou.
Yeah, Inspector?
The Kelso lawyer is on the phone. Wants to know what the charge is on Farley.
Tell him no charge. We're sending him home.
Lou!
Tell him, will you, Inspector? I'll give you the reasons in a minute.
You know what you're doing, Lou?
I think so, Inspector. I think so. I got a nose for these things. Inspector Sherman took some more persuading. But in the end, we let Steve Farley go home. I figured to give him a half an hour and then go after him. I did. But when I got to Farley's place at the Gramercy, I'd figured it too close. I got to Farley's door fast and put my shoulder to it. That was my mistake. Oh. The gun butt didn't catch me square, and I've got a hard head. I went down, but not out. There was no hurry. I knew where I could find the one that slugged me. I crawled over on the floor to Steve Farley. There was no hurry about him at all. He was dead. It was around 4 when I arrived for the third time at the Kelso place. It was quiet. There were a couple of crickets outside, and they were the only ones who felt like singing. I could see light through the front window, but somebody heard me coming. The lights went off as I got to the door. I gave it the shoulder treatment. I did what I was trained to do, dropped to the floor and shot back. Then I got up and found the light switch.
You're late, Lou Dana.
How is it? Bad?
As bad as he could make it. Don't let him get away. Don't.
I'll be right back. I'll call a doctor as soon as I get him.
Don't bother. Just get him.
I'll get him. I was outside, and on the broad lawn, there was no place for a murderer to hide. Then I heard something. Old man Kelso had a huge aviary at one corner of the house. Something had disturbed the birds. Elliot? Not a very good place to hide, Elliot. Too noisy. There's no home for a killer, Elliot. Not even in a cage. Come on out.
Come in and get me.
Sure. Only I haven't got much time, Elliot. There's a girl needs a doctor because you shot holes in her. That wasn't very smart, Elliot. You must be about out of bullets. Try again. No bullets? I've still got plenty. And there's no one I'd rather use them on. Have one. Close? Maybe I can do better. Now I've got the range. I think this one has your name on it, Elliot.
No, don't shoot, Dan. I'm coming out.
I changed my mind. I like it better this way, Elliot. I want you to know what Kelso felt like. And Farley. And Vivian. Hold still, Elliot.
No, don't, Dana.
You're not going anyplace.
Let go of me.
You should have stuck to bookkeeping, Elliot. It suits you better. That'll keep you quiet till I get back. I know. I wouldn't want to share the same cage with him either.
There was a chill in the night air as I walked back into the house. To the beautiful widow, the beautiful heiress who was bleeding red on a white rug. I called the station. Then I bent over her, and she opened her eyes. Vivian?
Did you get him?
Yes, I got him.
You're good at that.
That's my trade.
Dana.
Yes, Vivian?
I wonder what my trade was. I never found it, did I?
Looking like you do is a trade in itself, Vivian.
Maybe. But it's not enough to make a life out of.
Take it easy. I've got a doc on the way.
I don't think I'll wait. Dana.
Yes?
How did you know?
That it wasn't your brother? Well, I've been through it 1,000 times. That makes a difference.
It wasn't so smart.
Oh, smart enough. Almost. We bring your brother to trial, he springs an alibi. Acquittal. Then if we come back to you and Elliot, your brother could confess. We couldn't try him over again.
But we didn't fool you. Do you believe me, Dana, that I didn't know Elliot was going to shoot Steve?
He had to shoot him. When I let Steve go, Elliot knew he'd spill the alibi.
Then he had to shoot me, too, when I found out.
All right. All right.
Dana.
Hurt much?
No. Dana, Steve's not dead. He'll be all right.
Vivian, Steve is... He'll be all right.
I'm glad. Steve will get the money. Maybe he'll enjoy it.
Sure. Sure.
I never did. You hear me, Dana? I never did.
Vivian. Her face relaxed, and it was a beautiful face, even in death. In the distance, I could hear the wail of the oncoming siren. Late. A lot too late. And everything else was silence. I don't like killers.
You have just heard another in a series starring Dan Duryea as the Man from Homicide. Mr. Duryea can be seen starring in Al Jennings of Oklahoma. In tonight's cast, you heard Bill Boucher as Inspector Sherman, Herb Butterfield, Kelso, Joe Gilbert as Vivian, and Barney Phillip as Farley, and Tony Barrett as Elliot. Music was by Basil Atlam. The Man from Homicide is transcribed. Tonight's story was written by Dick Powell, directed by Dwight Houser. Be with us again next week, same time over most of these same ABC stations to hear Dan Duryea as the Man from Homicide. Orville Anderson speaking.
Preceding transcribed, America is sold on ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
You're listening to The Golden Age of Radio and Dan Duryea starring as the Man from Homicide. First broadcast on radio on July 16th, 1951. Stay tuned for more classic old-time radio from the 1930s through the 1950s when the Golden Age of Radio continues on Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY at 90.3 FM. Thank you. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. In a moment, the career of Alice Blair from 1939, but first from April 2nd, 1930. Cecil and Sally look for their lost car as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
Sally, you remember where I parked Ben-Hur?
Well, it was on one of these streets.
Now, that's a big help.
It's the best I can do.
Oh, let's see. Now, I parked it in front of a hotel.
Oh, yes, I remember. By a red line on the curb.
There was no red line there.
Oh, yes, Cecil. I remember that much.
Oh, you're dreaming. I'm not that dumb.
Well, I'm sure I saw a red line.
Oh, rats. Well, it's in this block, I'm sure.
Well, this isn't the way we went to the show.
I know it. We cut through the alley to save time.
Well, we should have cut through the alley to get back.
Not at this time of night. Don't you remember where we parked, Sally?
No, I don't, Cecil.
What's the matter with you? Can't you remember anything?
Well, what's the matter with you? You can't remember either.
Oh, it's not in this block. Darn.
But you said it was.
I made a mistake. I could have sworn I left it here.
Oh, I just remembered.
Well, where is it?
Well, I don't remember where you left it.
Oh, for cat's sake.
But I do remember something, and I know how we can find it.
How?
Well, I remember we parked it right in back of a yellow car with brown trimmings and cute little windows.
Oh, well, that's no help.
Oh, sure it is, Cecil. All we have to do is find the yellow car, and then we'll find Ben-Hur right behind it.
Oh, that's all.
Sir. Wasn't that smart of me?
Yes. And I guess you expect the other car will still be there.
Oh, I didn't think they might have moved it.
Hey, if I don't find it in a minute, I'm going to get a cop.
Oh, they haven't time to help you look for it, Cecil.
I know it. I want to notify the police. I think it's been stolen while we were in the show.
Oh, Cecil, that's funny.
What's funny about it?
Why, no one would steal Ben-Hur.
Oh, is that so? Well, why wouldn't they?
Well, they wouldn't waste their time. A robber would take a good car.
Oh, so Ben-Hur isn't a good car. Well, I like that.
Well, it's a good car for you, Cecil, but it isn't a good car to steal.
Why not?
Well, a robber couldn't sell it again.
Why not?
No one would buy it, don't you see?
Well, I bought it. Why wouldn't someone else buy it?
Well, Cecil, other people aren't as easy as you are.
Oh, yes? Huh.
Now, don't get mad, Cecil. I'm just trying to help you find Ben-Hur.
Well, if someone has taken it, they'll have to buy some gas. I didn't have much.
Maybe they'll have a puncture.
Oh, I'm positive I left it in this block.
No, Cecil, I think it was in the next block.
Oh, all right. Let's look in the next block, then.
Oh, Cecil, it's in that block.
How do you know?
Because I can see the car we parked it in back of.
Which one?
See that yellow car there? That's it.
Oh, we're parked behind that yellow car, huh?
Sir, aren't you glad I remembered?
And that's the only car of its kind in the city, huh?
Well, there couldn't be very many.
Oh, no. Don't you know a taxi when you see it?
Oh, is that a taxi?
Yes, that's a taxi. And you can see we're not parked behind it.
Well, imagine my embarrassment.
Huh. All we have to do is look behind all the taxis in the city.
Well, I seem to have made a little mistake.
Oh, I think I better look for a cop and tell him.
No. Let's look for Ben-Hur in the next block, Cecil.
All right. I don't know even whether we left it on this street or not now.
Cecil, I just thought of something else that might help us find the car.
If it's anything like being parked behind a taxi, no thanks.
Of course, this may not help, but, well, we're parked right in front of one of those, faucets.
What do you mean, a faucet?
You know, Cecil, one of those...
Do you mean a fire plug?
Yes, that's it. We parked right in front of one. That may not be much help, but...
Oh, that's a big help. Are you sure?
Oh, yes. Right by the fender.
Then why in the heck didn't you tell me before this?
Well, why? Is it important, Cecil?
Not now. Come on. I'm going to find a cop. We can't spend all the night looking for Ben-Hur.
Well, where does one find a cop, Cecil?
Oh, in a beauty parlor.
But, Cecil, there aren't any open.
Oh, Sally, act your age. There's one on the corner.
A beauty parlor?
No, a cop. Can't you see him?
Oh. Well, what are you going to say to him, Cecil?
Nothing. I'm just going to report that I've lost Ben-Hur.
Well, that's saying something.
Now, Sally, let me do the talking, will you?
All right.
Well, here he is. Mr. Officer, I want to report something.
Yes, someone stole Ben-Hur. At least we
Sally,
can't find
please.
It.
Sally, please. You see, I parked my car along
uh-huh,
here
right.
when
you,
we were going
we,
to
we
a
were
show,
going to
and
the
I can't...
Show,
Sally,
and...
you see, I've lost Ben-Hur.
And who is this Ben-Hur?
Oh, that's the name of my car. I parked along this street when I went to a show, and now it's gone.
You think someone stole it? Can you describe it? What make of car was it?
Well, it was a Saxon.
I didn't know that they made them anymore.
Oh, it's just a lovely car.
Yes, sir, and it's painted pink, and it has green fenders, and it has...
Oh, so you're the owner of that car. Well,
Yes, sir, that's my car. Have you seen it?
Yes, I've seen it. It's not stolen. You'll find it right around the corner there where you left it. I left something nice there for you.
Oh, gee, that's nice. Oh, I thought it was stolen. Well, thanks a million.
It's all right.
Goodbye. Oh, wasn't he nice, Cecil?
Yeah. Look, over there, Sally. There it is.
Well, it was right around the corner. Isn't that funny?
Oh, I was all hot and bothered there for a minute. Golly.
We walked right past it.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh. You were right.
About what, Cecil?
We are parked next to a fire plug. I didn't see that darn thing when we first parked there.
Well, maybe they just put it there tonight.
Well, here we are anyhow. Get in, Sally.
Cecil, wait. Here's a note for you. The cop must have left it.
Let me have it. Well, wasn't he pleasant? Just one of those little things to end the day right. A tag.
Daytime radio listening is a big part of Mrs. America's way of life. And on NBC, daytime radio is a big part of our overall schedule of top listening entertainment. Tune here tomorrow and each day, Monday through Friday, for such smile-provoking programs as Double or Nothing with your genial quizmaster, Walter O'Keefe, Strike It Rich, the program of the heart presided over by Warren Hull, and Welcome Travelers, bringing Tommy Bartlett's interesting interviews with travelers in the Windy City. Later, Dave Garraway strolls through a pleasant quarter hour of enjoyable radio listening and invites you to join him for the proceedings. Yes, all through the day, NBC presents America's most popular radio programs, comedy, drama, music, and information. So if you suffer from the housework blues, let us brighten your day with the entertainment available on this station of the NBC radio network.
The career of Alice Blair, the transcribed, true-to-life story of a lovely girl fighting for fame and happiness, facing the problems, the heartaches and thrills on the ladder to success. At this time every day, Monday through Friday, join Alice Blair in her fascinating career.
It was the poet Wordsworth who said, "The world is too much with us. Late and soon, getting and spending, we lay waste our powers." And I'm afraid in many ways he was right, especially where we women are concerned. Our daily whirl of activities, the evenings we're out late, those busy mornings cleaning house, everything conspires to play havoc with our complexions. And goodness knows a woman's complexion is part and parcel of her natural charm. That's why it's so important to guard the skin by proper cleansing. I mean with a pure cold cream. Daggett and Ramsdell Perfect Cold Cream. Because Daggett and Ramsdell Perfect Cold Cream removes dirt, dust, and makeup without robbing your skin of the natural oils. For your own fresh attractiveness, use it before you go to bed and then again in the morning. Ask at your drugstore or beauty counter for the big, generous 45-cent jar of Daggett and Ramsdell Perfect Cold Cream.
Alice has had an exciting and eventful afternoon at Mercury Studios. William Waldron, the top director, is to direct Alice in her screen test. And the young actor, Barry Clayton, at his own request, is to play with her in the scene. Both Waldron and Clayton were deeply impressed by the script Alice brought to use in the test. And Waldron was more than enthusiastic over Alice's reading of the scene. Of course, she carefully evaded all their questions as to who had written it. For Alice promised Carl E. Bright she would, under no condition, mention that he was the writer. The feud between Carl and Hollywood is notorious. Home at the apartment. Uncle Andy, waiting for Alice, hears a tap at the door. A tap that becomes more familiar as the days in Hollywood go on.
Yeah, don't need to give myself three guesses who that is.
It's that lady from next door again.
Hello there, Myra.
Hello, Andy. The kettle's on. Come on in and have a cup of nice hot tea.
Hot tea on a day like this?
Of course. Why, there's nothing so refreshing. Come on.
Well, it sounds mighty attractive, but I'm expecting Alice any minute now, and I just don't think I better leave.
We could leave the door to my apartment open. Then we'd hear her when she comes upstairs.
Well, I think maybe I just better stay here.
Well, everything's all set out, so if you change your mind...
All set out, did you say?
Uh-huh.
Well, come on. I'll come in just for a spell, and we'll leave the door open.
That's fine.
Oh, Mary, you know... You shouldn't put yourself out this way.
Maybe I like doing it. Now I'll pour the tea.
You know, there's nothing more gracious than a woman presiding over a tea table.
Uh-huh. But a tea table should be set with gleaming silver to make the picture complete.
Oh, I hadn't missed the gleaming silver. To me, the picture is already quite complete.
How nice of you.
And there's plenty of time for all that gleaming silver someday when you get a home of your own.
Oh, don't, please.
Surely you didn't take offense at what I said.
Oh, no, of course not. It's only that the idea of a home is so far from my mind. You see, Andy, I've battled alone and, well... You take two lumps of sugar and no lemon.
Hmm? No. How did you remember that?
How could I forget it? There you are.
Oh, thank you. You know, it seems to me, even if a woman does follow a career as her life work and chooses to battle through alone, as you say, there's still no reason why she can't have her own home and even have the gleaming silver.
Oh, of course, if her career is a highly successful one. You know, I wonder sometimes if I've chosen the right path. Andy?
Hmm?
I had a chance to go on location for 2 weeks.
Yes?
I'm not going because of you.
Oh, now, see here, Mary. You can't let us interfere with your work like that.
Can't I? Well, I just couldn't bear to go away for 2 weeks. You don't know what it's meant having you and Alice so close by. Well, for the first time, this little apartment has seemed like a real home to me. I never knew what I was missing before. It's been such fun asking you in for tea, running in and out, asking your advice.
Oh, but, you know, this will have to stop, Myra, if it's to interfere with your work.
Well, is work everything? Oh, come on, let's not even think of it. I did it because I wanted to.
Well, no, I don't like that one bit.
No, not another word about it, do you hear? We're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to be very, very giddy over the weekend. Oh, I have such wonderful plans. Andy, have you ever been to Venice?
To Venice? Mm-hmm. Well, no, I should say I haven't.
Would you like to go with me?
Go to Venice, would you?
Oh, you sweet
nothing. I don't mean to Venice, Italy. Oh. I mean Venice, California.
Oh.
You know, down by the beach. Oh, really? It's like Coney Island.
Oh, well, that's a horse of a different color.
Andy, you're too wonderful for words. Will you go with me? We'll have a rollicking time.
Well, it sounds a bit giddy for a man of my age.
A man of your age. When you get on a roller coaster, you'll forget there's such a thing as age.
Me on a roller coaster? Uh-huh. Oh, the very idea.
Oh, that's just the way you talked about dancing the other night. And you turned out to be the best partner I ever had.
Yeah, well, that's a bit different from a roller coaster.
Oh, you old blasé New Yorker. Of course, I realize that Venice isn't nearly as big as your Coney Island, but things don't have to be big to be cozy, do they?
Mm, not at all. Your apartment, for instance.
It would be such a lot of fun. Well,
me on a roller coaster, zooming through space. I don't know. I just don't take to those things.
Oh, you never know how much you like a thing till you try. And I promise you won't fall out, because I'd hang on, oh, very, very tight.
Well, I don't know. I may consider it after all.
If I coaxed very, very hard.
Well, and you say you would hang on very, very tight?
Uh-huh.
Gone, well, afraid or stolen, one uncle.
Is he in here by any chance?
Oh, hello there, Alice.
Hello. Come on in.
We left the door open so I'd hear you when you came.
You mean so I'd hear you? Heard you laughing clear down the front hall. What's the big joke? Don't you dare tell.
Oh, no, not in a million years.
Have some tea, Alice.
No, thanks.
Oh, come on, Alice. You sit down and have a cup while you tell us all about what happened today.
Let me pour it for you.
Thanks, I really don't care for any. It's too hot.
Oh, that's just notion some folks have. That you get all steamed up over a hot drink.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you come right down to it, there's nothing more refreshing on a hot afternoon than a cup of hot tea. Oh. It cools you off much quicker than a cold drink does. Now, am I right, Myra?
You absolutely are. Come on, Alice, join us.
No, thanks, really. I have to start learning lines anyway. Have to be at the studio at the crack of dawn.
Oh.
Oh, want to help me with the lines, Uncle Andy?
Oh, wait till he has another cup of tea. Then I'll send him in.
Oh, I think I've had all that's good for me. And it's been a very stimulating afternoon, Myra.
Say, what are you two talking about anyway? What's the big mystery?
Should we let her in on the secret, Myra?
Don't you dare.
No, can't let you in on it. No, sir, you're too young. You wouldn't understand.
That's the hateful kind of a remark you make to a growing child.
Well, enjoy the tea, Myra.
We'll do it again whenever you say the word. See you later.
Oh, I tell you, you should have tried some of that tea. It really does cool you off.
Being with that woman never cools me off.
Oh, now, see here, chickadee. Don't go off on a tangent.
Gee, good to get home.
Now, I don't know why you rear up the way you do. Myra just puts herself out to be a good friend to her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's sort of sad and pathetic. She's been alone so much. Having us here, she said, made the place seem sort of homelike.
Mm-hmm.
I really got a bit upset, though. She turned down a call to go on location for 2 weeks, just so she could be around here and enjoy our company.
Well, that sort of puts us on the spot, doesn't it? What are we supposed to do, stay around and entertain her?
Oh, we'll make it up to her some way.
Say, what was the big secret? You both acted like you'd swallowed a mouse or something.
Oh, no, we didn't anything of the kind.
I heard you laughing when I came up the stairs. What was it, anyway?
Oh, it wasn't anything at all.
Well, if it wasn't anything at all, why don't you tell me what it was?
You're just magnifying the whole thing. It was a little joke that Myra and I had, that's all. Nothing more than that.
But why act so mysterious about it?
We weren't doing anything of the kind.
You said yourself, should we let her in on the secret?
Now, see here. Just because you're my favorite niece is no reason for you to check up on every little thing I'm thinking and every little joke I'm sharing with someone else.
Oh, I'm not checking up on you, Uncle Andy, but we've always done everything together, especially since we've been out here.
Well, there are a lot of things you do that I don't check into. Much as I think they ought to be sometimes. No, sir, you just mind your own business, young lady, and let your uncle have his private life.
I'm sorry. I had no intention of interfering with your private life.
Oh, no. Don't get huffy, dear.
Well, I'm not huffy.
You'll find out in due time what it is we're talking about.
When will I find out?
When it's over and done with. And not before.
That innocent little remark is destined to lead to an awful lot of trouble. Is Alice right in her suspicions of Myra? Is Myra out for Uncle Andy? If there's one place on earth where a man looks like a bull in a china shop, that's a beauty parlor. But I was in just such a spot the other afternoon. You see, I had a date with a lovely creature, and because she was going to be late, she told me to meet her there. Did I feel silly and embarrassed? However, I did learn something. Women pay far more attention to their complexions than we men ever realize. And when I spoke to my date about the matter, she said, no woman can afford to neglect her skin. With a man's typically blunt curiosity, I asked her what she used on her complexion. And she replied, if you must know, I always cleanse with Daggett and Ramsdell Perfect Cold Cream. And judging from how fresh and soft and absolutely irresistible her complexion is, I guess there must be something to this idea of cleansing your face with Daggett and Ramsdell Cold Cream every day. Why not try that 25-cent jar? Remember the name, Daggett and Ramsdell. The name you can trust. Is Uncle Andy interested in Myra? Or is he, manlike, flattered by her attention? Alice draws her own conclusion when she comes home unexpectedly in tomorrow's exciting, transcribed Career of Alice Blair.
Golden Age of Radio on WMKY with an episode of The Career of Alice Blair from 1939. We also heard Cecil and Sally from 1930. This has been the Golden Age of Radio, classic old-time radio programs from the 1930s through the 1950s. Material for this program provided by the Internet Archive, an online nonprofit library of books, movies, music, and old-time radio shows on the web at archive.org. Tune in again for the Golden Age of Radio next week at the same time and channel on WMKY at 90.3 FM and online at WMKY.org.